Procrastinators have a reputation as loafers, laggards, and lollygaggers. A bit harsh, believes University of California Riverside philosopher John Perry, a self-described procrastinator who asserts that unlike their reputation, most people who excel at postponing the inevitable actually lead productive lives by busying themselves with many tasks to avoid others deemed more onerous. Perry calls it structured procrastination, a strategy of completing less important tasks to avoid those higher on an individual's priority list. He's written a self-help book for procrastinators, The Art of Procrastination, a guide of effective dawdling, lollygagging, and postponing. And it's a great pleasure to welcome John Perry to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, I'm very happy to be there.
At what point did you decide to take what you felt you were, a procrastinator, and explore it?
Well, actually, the key event happened a long time ago in 1995. I was sitting around, and I definitely should have been grading papers, but I wasn't, couldn't get myself to do it. I felt terrible about it, and was getting depressed. Then I noticed that actually I get a lot done, and in fact, around Stanford, where I worked at the time, people thought of me as a guy who got a lot done, kind of a go-to guy, and it was kind of a paradox. And I realized that I'm just a person who gets a lot done as a way of not doing something else. That's what I call structured procrastination. And I found out as time went by that a lot of other people were happy to hear about this concept because it applied to them too.
I want to talk a little bit about structured procrastination in a moment, but what is it about procrastination that you think we look at? Many of us could identify ourselves as procrastinators, and yet it is a term that is wrapped in a negative connotation.
Well, absolutely. I mean, people will tell you that procrastinators are producing a lot of stress in themselves and others. They'll probably have heart attacks and die early and maybe become alcoholics and in the meantime drive everyone else crazy, and they're probably responsible for the recession too. But I think that's mostly baloney. Procrastination is a flaw that a lot of us have, but it's not the end of the world. It's not like, you know, being a serial killer. And most of us who are what I call structured procrastinators are actually pretty productive people. And if you go back through history, a lot of the great things we have, books and ideas and inventions, were dreamt up by people as a way of not doing something else that they or someone else thought they should be doing.
So in this structured procrastination, where we are doing other things to put off the inevitable, what is so... Why do we do that in the sense of, say, okay, I know that this is important, but right now I'm going to bother with this, this, and this?
Well, sometimes it's just because the task is intrinsically unpleasant, but the mysterious things are when it's actually something that won't be so bad to do or we might even enjoy once we get started. But for some reason, we don't. I mean, if writing is part of your job, you probably, once you get started on a writing task, you enjoy it, or at least you don't hate it. But nevertheless, it's very hard to get yourself started. I'm not sure I know why that is. The main message of the book is, well, if you are that kind of person, maybe the best thing to do is pay a zillion of dollars, go to a shrink, and get over it, if that's going to work. But failing that, realize it's not the worst thing in the world, as long as you give yourself lots of things to do while you're not doing the thing that's just so important.
And those other things are important in their own right, right? Or can
be. Well,
they
often turn out to be more important than the thing you're not doing. Another reason people procrastinate is they've set the bar too high. They accept some task and they immediately begin to have fantasies about what a great job they're going to do on it, and then all of a sudden they realize the risk of failure is so high that they need to kind of wait till the last minute to give themselves permission to do a merely adequate job. The way around that is to decide to do a merely adequate job when you accept the task, because for most tasks, a merely adequate job is adequate.
I was thinking very much along those same lines when I was reading in the book. You have a chapter on to-do lists, And that you find on to-do list, you can either do something that is incredibly mundane. You'll put down, you know, get coffee, drop mail off in the mailbox, and the things that you would just do normally. And then, you know, item four is paint the house. It seems as though sometimes they can be very difficult to differentiate that indeed you sort of overpromise yourself of what you can achieve.
Yeah, the to-do lists are for the procrastinator not really so important as reminders of what to do, but as something where you go through the to-do list, you cross an item off, you give yourself a little pat on the back. And if you have a big task like paint the garage, the thing to do is break it down into smaller tasks like buy the paint or pick the color or stir the paint or find the brushes or get everything into one place. And so even if you don't make it all the way through painting the garage, maybe you'll make it through some of the preliminary tasks. Or even better, as you start making it through the preliminary tasks and checking them off, you'll get motivated and you'll actually get the damn thing painted. But to-do lists for the procrastinator, you have to realize they're not just reminders. They're ways of structuring your psyche so you can kind of get motivated to do things.
You write in the book about procrastinators and the computer, and you talk about how for the procrastinator who's waiting till the last minute, the computer obviously moves very fast and you can get things done. But it's also, as you say, the bane for the procrastinator because it makes sinking time in utterly worthless pursuits tempting and incredibly easy.
That's exactly right. I mean, it is a good thing because, you know, it used to be if you wanted to meet a deadline, like on a writing assignment, you'd have to get it into FedEx 24 hours in advance. Now you can hit the send button 1 second in advance and it'll get there on time. But it's a big danger because, like you say, you get up in the morning, maybe you even got up early and make it through your email. Your first email has a link in it. You hit that link because you can't resist, and then that link has a link, and pretty soon you're on Facebook or something god-awful like that. And all of a sudden it's lunchtime, and you've learned all kinds of strange things that will help you do a crossword puzzle, but you haven't made it very far on your email. So the computer can be a real rat hole that the procrastinator can fall down.
When you look at structured procrastination and the fact that we are doing all of these other tasks to put off the onerous task, but we are still getting a lot of work done, at some point you got to get to the onerous task, though, right?
Well, yes. I mean, unless you're lucky and it disappears, maybe your boss changes his mind about what you should be doing, or your boss gets fired, or the world comes to an end, or something like that. But lots of times none of those things happen and you just got to do the task. Sometimes procrastination is a way of giving yourself permission to do a less than perfect job on it. Sometimes you just need to do the task and there's no way around it. In that case, it's important, like with the garage case, to break it up into small things and get yourself started and give yourself a lot of congratulations for each little piece of the thing you managed to do.
And when you look at, how much is organization a part of it?
Well, organizational skills often are lacking with the procrastinator. Those two things seem to go together, procrastination and being kind of disorganized. Now, often the procrastinator, though, has a kind of hidden form of organization that isn't obvious to people, what I call horizontal organization. People like me find it very hard to use filing cabinets. We want to have all of our projects spread around on a horizontal surface where they can kind of beckon to us. And to the vertical organizer, the one who uses filing cabinets, that looks very disorganized, but it's really not. Although it's not optimal either, because you can sometimes waste a lot of time looking for something that you missed late. But, you know, organizational problems are usually not the biggest problem the procrastinator has. I can see the project I should be working on. I can see the stack of papers I need to grade right in front of me. That's not the problem. Problem is I just can't make myself get busy on them until grades are due in a couple of hours, and then I have to kind of really burn the midnight oil to get it done.
You point out that non-procrastinators are not the enemy.
Non-procrastinators are not the enemy, and it's important to kind of make sure you're not too annoying to the non-procrastinators you work with, because non-procrastinators are kind of like human alarm clocks. They can really help the procrastinator get things done on time. So you want to make sure that that you give them a lot of appreciation for what they do, and when you're not doing what they think you should be doing, you're at least doing something else that might contribute to the project eventually.
You have a great line at the end of that chapter in collaborating with the enemy, question mark. Use your skills as a structured procrastinator to do lots of relatively unimportant tasks that the non-procrastinator might never get around to. Buy lunch, play some music, keep them happy.
Absolutely.
So
particularly important if you're married to a non-procrastinator.
So there's a jester quality to the procrastinator, isn't there?
Yeah, the procrastinator who's going to be an effective human being has to be a bit of a self-manipulator, get themselves to do something by breaking up the tasks into small things or setting the alarm clock or playing some catchy music. They also have to kind of learn to take account of the mood of other people. I mean, because working with other people is the key to being an effective, though procrastinate, individual.
You also explore the fringe benefits of being a procrastinator, things that are benefits that perhaps that are not obvious at first glance.
Well, yeah, some of these fringe benefits are a little bit chimerical. That is, most of us procrastinators think that that adrenaline rush that we get at the last minute when we put things off too long really makes us do good work. Psychologists tell us that, based on their careful observations and control groups, that's not so. A lot of us tell ourselves that while we're procrastinating, our subconscious mind is doing a lot of work that makes the end product better. Psychologists are also skeptical about that. But there are some real fringe benefits, too. Like sometimes the task you might have spent yesterday on disappears before you get around to it today. Sometimes the thing you do as a way of not doing the thing you're supposed to do turns out to be so important that everybody forgets about the thing you're supposed to do. So there are some fringe benefits, but I don't want to sound like I'm saying it's not a flaw to be a procrastinator. I'm just saying it's not the worst thing in the world.
You say it's not a flaw, and yet it really takes you to the end of the book, to the appendix, where you are talking about, you know, if you picked up this book thinking that you could become a non-procrastinator by reading it, that wasn't really your point.
No, the point is to make you not feel so bad about being a procrastinator. If you're a structured procrastinator, you're probably getting a lot done. And to give you a few hints to make your procrastinating habit or trait or flaw or whatever it is less of a problem for yourself and others.
The book is an awful lot of fun and a beautifully put together. It's The Art of Procrastination, A Guide to Effective Dawdling, Lollygagging, and Postponing. It's from Workman. John Perry, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
Well, I've enjoyed being here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.